The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to WWDB AM 860, the multicultural voice of the Delaware Valley. My name is Joe Valley. I'll be your moderator for this afternoon. And joining us today on the program are Rong Sorn and Sirun Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. 610-664-4100 is the number if you'd like to call and talk to Rong or Sirun. It's going to be a very interesting hour coming up, and that's how long we're going to be here, till 1 o'clock. Rong, Sirun, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Joe, and thank you, WWDB, for having us today to share about the work that we do and who we are and the struggle we have as a community organization, and also hopefully see what the audience might be able to do to help make it better for all of us as a community resident of Philadelphia.
Absolutely. Now, you are part of the Cambodian community, and when you think of Philadelphia, normally the Cambodian community isn't one that would come to mind at first when you mentioned Philadelphia, but you are well represented in the community. What is the size of the Cambodian community in the Delaware Valley?
Approximately, we have about 18 to 20 Cambodians in the greater Philadelphia area. And I just wanted to share briefly about the historical part of our community, how we came to the United States and why we settled in Philadelphia. Many of us may know about the genocide and the killing field in Cambodia between 1975 and 1979. And that after the Vietnam Wars happening in Cambodia, when, matter of fact, the U.S. government were part of the taking part in the bombing of Cambodia and how the Khmer came to power and took over, and when the genocide happened, and then when the war broke again, when the Vietnamese troops invade Cambodia, that's when Cambodians flee the country, escape to the jungle along Cambodia and Thai border, and then we were rescued as refugees. Most of us would stay in a refugee camp for between a few months to 8-10 years before we were accepted to the United States. And most of us came here in the 80s, between 1982 to 1986.
And I wanted to emphasize that it's 18 to 20,000.
Okay, yeah, yeah. But wait a minute, 18 to 20, I know there's got to be more than that.
Yeah, and actually, Philly is actually the fourth largest Cambodian population in the United States, with Long Beach, California being one, Lowell, Massachusetts, number two, number three is Seattle, Washington, and Philadelphia is actually number fourth.
That is definitely a fact that I did not know. That's very interesting. We actually have a phone call. We have Bob Gaynor, who's on the line. Bob, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you today.
You have a question for Rong or Sirun?
Well, actually, I'm good friends with Bob Rovner, and he invited me on the show to talk about GetARoom.com.
I think you've got the wrong show. This is about the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. Sorry about that, guys. We got a little sidetrack there with an issue. But I'm sorry, Sirun. You had more to emphasize about the community?
Oh, definitely. Like, I'm 27 years old. I was born in 1985, but I was born in a refugee camp. And a lot of times people think that – and the war that happened in Cambodia was a genocide. And it's a unique type of genocide. It's a self-genocide where the people were basically killing themselves because of the Khmer Rouge regime. And the interesting thing that people don't realize is, like, one-third of the population was wiped out, and majority of the population were educators, artists, free thinkers, doctors, everybody, scientists. And so when a country had to when it had to basically get reborn, we had to restart from the ground up. So a lot of times we start up, the conversation is called year zero, meaning we literally had to restart our society, and our own culture was almost wiped out. So when we all a group of us came to the United States, some went to France, some went to Australia. You know, I guess as refugees, we had to rethink of our own identities as American. Mm-hmm. And how are we going to, you know, be better citizens of this country now, but also think about the people that are still in Cambodia that needs our assistance?
That is definitely a story that needs to be told. And I was not actually aware of that, mm-hmm. that much of the population was wiped out.
Yep.
How did you settle in Philadelphia?
I know for myself, my family was sponsored, and Since I came, I was about 2 months, so I don't really know my family's complete history like that, because a lot of the elders and also parents who grew up in these refugee camps along the border, and also the grandparents who survived the genocide, they have a lot of mental health issues. So there's a lot of disparities within our community that we still struggle to service and assist with. So I know for us, we first arrived in Syracuse, New York for a few months, and I remember my mom and dad telling me that we were placed in, a lot of the Cambodians are placed in the inner city, like high poverty, high crime, and we were living in a house with about 10 other families, and it was a small house, and we made our way to Philadelphia because there was a larger population here, and I think there was a stronger support, because almost all the Cambodians were displaced. They were just placed randomly throughout the whole country, right? Mm-hmm. So it was really important that we find the proper support, because we didn't know English, we didn't know anything, right? And I know my mom, one souvenir she kept was when she first came here, the person who picked our family up from the airport gave us bedspreads, and she still has the same old, holy, dirty bedspread. And I never knew why she kept it, but she told me like about 2 years ago, the reason why she kept this old bedspread was the first thing we slept on here in America.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted to emphasize that the reason we are accepted as refugees is also, it's tied to the Vietnam Wars. And most refugees came here because they were having some sort of affiliation with the U.S. government, or have served during the Vietnam War during that time. So the priority at the time was to accept those who either the spouse or the husband was served during the Vietnam War, or the widow, the children of those soldiers who were brought to the U.S. And I was listening to WHYY this morning that there was an amnesty in 86 during Reagan in office to bring these refugees over because of the political affiliation back then. So that's how we were brought as refugees to the United States. So I just wanted to point that out too. That's why we were accepted here as well. And a lot of us are sponsored through churches or the refugee resettlement agencies who's sponsor us here. And like Sarun said, we most of us, because of the limited, the Office of Refugee Resettlement need to resettle as many refugees as possible with limited money. We were put into an urban poor neighborhood. That's what it was in the 80s.
And is that the neighborhood that in Philadelphia?
Yes, in Philadelphia, in South Philadelphia, in particular in West Philly, around 40 to 1500 blocks of Walnut Locust. At the time, it was a huge of refugee from Southeast Asia, from Vietnam, from Laos, from Cambodia. Well, there and in Logan, in those areas, were used to be really, really poor area, and that's where we were settled in the 80s.
How are those areas now?
Those areas now in West Philadelphia, most people had moved out because the high housing market, the increase of housing market because the University of Penn expanding to that area, and people cannot afford. So they either moved to Southwest, to South Philly, or Abu Dhabi.
Now, you noticed that those issues were prevalent, you said, in the 80s and, mm-hmm. and to a lesser degree now?
I mean, yes, at the time during the settlement, we were facing, most of us were unable to speak English. We have to learn a new language. We have to find your jobs. We have to take care of our children in this new land that most of us never knew about, and most of our elderly were going through culture shocks. That was a huge thing for us, and it's just hard to adapt when we had no resources, no knowledge, or no language skill. So we start from scratch, nothing. We did not come with any money or anything at all, like unlike any other immigrant from other country that they came well prepared. So we came as really empty-handed refugee.
Now, you said that you had a sponsor. Is that correct?
My family is sponsored by the Nationality Services Center. That is one of the refugee resettlement agency in the 80s. I mean, they still exist now, and they're still helping new refugees coming. But it's less and less refugee now. So they've been really helpful finding us places and also help us find a job.
Now, okay, I was going to say, did they provide the schooling for you? Because you guys both speak the English language beautifully. So I think it says something for yourselves and your character.
Yeah, it's a combination. The experience, because of the program that at the time, in terms of resettling refugees, that if you're 18 and older, you have to find a job right away, right? The sponsor has to help you find a job because the government only can assist you for 6 months, up to 6 months, right, for adult. That, meanwhile, you have to either go to school or find a job right away. Actually, I was placed in a sweatshop making clothes, but I wanted to go to school when I see people go to school. So I went to enroll through the help of an ESL teacher. I went to enroll in South Philadelphia High School. At the time, I was 19 years old, but because I was too old, and they put me in 11th grade. So I was in high school for 2 years before I graduated. So, it's a combination of self-discipline, hard work, and also the assistance from the government and the sponsor agency that kind of help us facilitating through.
Now, what issues do you see the most frequently in your communities, and where do you provide the most assistance to the community?
Things changed before was about, again, with meeting the basic needs of our community. Now we are talking about issues that are pressing. The health disparity, I'm not sure how many people know this, but the tri-state area, there's no doctor who can speak English. None.
Cambodian.
Who can speak Cambodian? Not a medical doctor, not a psychiatrist, not a psychologist. And coming from a war-torn country, experienced a genocide, and many adult and elderly experience post-traumatic stress disorder, we haven't had any doctor who speak Cambodian to help with the issue yet. So that's one thing that we are doing. And then the education and also immigration issues and also social and economic development.
Now, that's interesting because the first hospital granted $25,000 to your association, and yet there's no doctors who speak Cambodian.
No, not yet.
Very, very interesting. We've been talking with Rong Sorn and Sir Run Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. 610-664-4100 is the number that you can call if you have any questions for the two or if you could find ways to help assist them in their community. Now, what can you tell us about the organization and the services that you provide?
Well, I'm going to turn to Sir Run Chan to elaborate about the program and services that we offer. So, Sir Run?
Oh, yeah. Definitely, we do a lot of services and programs at CAGP, the Cambodian Association, and we're really unique in a way because we're a really small nonprofit organization. And so way back in the past when we first started, I suppose, when refugees started coming in, it was just actually a van of people who are in the country already. I think there was about 10 of them, and it was just in the early 80s, it was just them driving to the laundromats, to the supermarkets, helping them get acculturated with this culture and the systems here. But that small group of people really wanted to improve and change things, and that's when the Cambodian Association was birthed. And this is our 34th year of existence, so we've been around since 1979, and our services are, we do a lot. We do, and the unique thing is that we touch base on every single generation that are part of our community. So we do intake services, we do intense case management in general. We do culture and language program classes where we our heritage is really important to us so that we can continue to teach the history, the language, and the traditional Cambodian dance courses. And that specific service, we don't get much funding at all for that. So it's heavy based on volunteering. We have our after-school program, which is an award-winning after-school program with project-based learning. It targets children from kindergarten to fifth grade. Then we have our high school youth program, which is highly successful. That's all high school students. And our summer career exploration program again. And then we have our internship volunteer experience, which targets college students. And then we have our parenting class. And then, that targets the parents. And then we have our...
You've got all the bases covered.
Yeah.
And which is very important, too, because definitely. Like Rong was saying before, mm-hmm. there were older generations who came here.
Yep.
who were going through cultural shock, mm-hmm. as well as the younger generation, too.
Yeah.
So it is very important that you guys, you know, have all the bases covered as far as that goes.
Yep. And then the last one's the Legacy Project and our health, Khmer Health Initiative, Asian Health Initiative, which targets the elders. So, yeah, we have it across the board. And the key thing that we wanted to emphasize is that, you know, some other organizations, sometimes they focus on one or two things, whether it's just doing social services or just doing working with youth or just working with elders or just health. We go across the board. And as a small nonprofit, you know, with the, everyone knows that nonprofits, there's been huge budget cuts everywhere and a lot of nonprofits are getting cut out. But what I want to stress is the cultural nonprofits are really at the bottom. And there's over across the country, the first to go are cultural nonprofits because we're smaller, so we don't get much of the funding. So I think that's the key thing that people need to understand, that we're doing all this work for really low, with really low resources.
Now, what do you guys try to do to attempt to get the funding?
Well, we've been doing so many different things. Like today is opportunity for us to bring awareness of what we do and what the struggle we have. Just to let you know, in August, because of the funding cut, I have to take 75% pay cut, and I have to cut my staff by 50% while the work continues to increase. As you see in our newsletter, that the work continues to increase, but the salary had to cut just to really address the funding cut. So that's something that maybe a lot of our community don't understand, or the funder don't realize, that when we are at the bottom of the funding stream, a lot of time funder would fund the larger organizations or this intermediate organization, and then sometime by the time the funding come to us, it's so little, and we have to really try to get different funding to support one programs. And at the same time, we soliciting for donations, we do fundraising, and we write grants to public and private foundations and government subcontract. We do multiple things to hopefully to increase the diverse funding to support our program and services.
Every little bit helps. And I noticed also in your newsletter here that recently the Wells Fargo Community Partners Award was given to you guys.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that, the Community Partner Award.
Well, we are in the community. We've been actually a loyal customer of Wells Fargo for the last 20 or so years. And they see, because we are, our office literally like a few blocks away from each other, and they know the work that we do, the work that we put into the community, the impact that we make. And they have this special program that really acknowledge the commitment and the work that we do in the community. So they, each branch can select an organization as a partner to award the $1,000. So that's how we came about, is that we've been selecting. This is our third year that Wells Fargo had selects our organization as their partner.
So third year in a row.
Yes.
Oh, great.
Yes.
Wonderful. We'll continue this discussion after a short break. We're talking with Rong Sorn and Sir Run Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. You're listening to WWDB AM 860, the multicultural voice of the Delaware Valley. Welcome back to WWDB AM 860. I'm here today with Rong Sorn and Sir Run Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. 610-664-4100 is the number if you'd like to call and have any questions for the two. We'll be here till 1 o'clock today. Now, Rong, last night there was also a community public safety meeting
Yes.
on 7th Street that you guys have.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we have to host this urgent meeting because of the recent shooting happening on 2300 blocks of South 7th Street at that corner grocery store. And there, someone, a customer, got hurt trying to fight with the shooter. So he got shot and was hospitalized. And it was in the big news. And that's just one incident that kind of built on too many incidents prior to that, but not many reports going on. So when this incident happened, people start talking about it, and we see the increase of crime in that area. So it is an urgent that we have to work with the police department, the DA office, and other city and government agency to bring safety to the community. So what we did was we organized this meeting to bring community members, business owners from that area, and all these city agencies to come together to find ways to keep the community safe. So that was the purpose of the meetings. And we had the district attorney office, the police department, the mayor commission on Asian American Affairs was there. Even the Department of Justice was participate, and many other community organizations was there to support and to also to work alongside with the community member and business owner to bring changes, positive changes to the neighborhood to really make the community safer.
Yeah, and I wanted to express that 7th Street business corridor is a high concentration of Cambodian businesses. So it's between Oregon through Snyder on 7th Street.
That's a nice stretch.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's a lot of Asian supermarkets that are opening up, and there are a lot of American supermarkets in South Philly. So we wanted to really stress that if we want to keep our cultural stores and businesses, you know, to highlight the city as well, we have to work together as a community and officials, you know, to make sure that people still get to experience this cultural dynamic that our city of Philadelphia provides. And so, like, for listeners, you know, who didn't know, there's a really large Cambodian population on 7th Street,
yes.
And there's restaurants and things like that, and we want to keep it safe so that we continue to promote it and hopefully have more visitors come in.
Yeah, and also we have the city council representing in that district. Councilman Mark Swiller was there, the Department of Commerce. This is the first time, really, the Department of Commerce have sent a representative to come and work closely with us to really bring some resources and information to support these local small businesses owner, when other part of the city have been doing this for quite some time and have improved the business and the community. So this is something that we want to bring change, because we know we are a small agency. We can't do a lot of things. So what we do is we engage and mobilize our community members and the government agencies to really bring changes to the community. And that's one thing we do. And we've been doing a lot of advocacy, too, to bring issues affecting our community to local elected official, state and federal issues as health disparity, immigration, social and economic development, and education. All these are really pressing for our community, and we need to share more, and so that those city agencies or government agencies can also help address those issues. So, because our goal is that we can work together to improve the quality of life of everyone, regardless, so that as a society we can live a better, make a better society for all of us to live in, right?
So you were very encouraged by the meeting last night then?
Yes.
Definitely. Now, also, you talk about in the Cambodian community, you want people to be empowered and you want them to vote.
Yes.
And to be heard through,
yes,
teen programs and organizations, proactivity. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we know that in order for us to have a voice, we have to get involved and we have to participate in an electoral process. So election is new to us because we are refugees. We came from a country that, you know, not our generation or the generation before us never had a right to vote in, you know, back home. And coming to this country, that's something new to them. So what we do is we not only help them to become a citizen, we help them to register to vote, and we educate them how to get out to vote. We even bring the voting machine to show them how to vote. And then when the election come, we mobilizing people out to vote. We go door to door. We send out postcards that are in Cambodian and English. We even do anything, public media, anything that will mobilize and increase the number of Cambodian American out to vote, because we know that our voice needs to be heard and that we are here also contributing to this society as a whole.
Is it a younger or older turnout as far as voting goes?
We see the older generation, when they once they learn, they understand, they're very loyal, they will participate on an ongoing basis.
Is it harder to persuade them than the younger?
Actually, the older are easier to persuade.
Really?
Yes, and the youth, the middle-aged group, they still, you know, they understand those who get out to vote, like any other community, right? So we have more relationship with the youth and elderly, so that we have the connection and we are able to really get them to feel inspired, empowered to get out to vote. But we can't say much about the middle-aged generation because they are mostly independent, self-sufficient. They do things on their own, and so we know that they go out to vote, but we don't know how much. But in terms of elderly and youth, we know that we can get them out to vote.
Yep. You can get them the uh-huh. You can twist their arm the better than the middle age.
Yeah, and I just wanted to also stress the whole giving them a voice or helping reveal the voice, because something that a lot of times, especially in American culture, is the stereotypes about Asian Americans, right? And then that's just something that we need to reveal, that not all, like the stereotype, some stereotypes are Asian Americans. We're all super smart. We're all going to colleges, graduating high schools, going to Ivy Leagues. But that's not the case for the Southeast Asian population. And a lot of people don't realize that, the best way that I've always said it was, we're a minority within a minority. The Southeast Asian population and other South Asians is the fact that we're a small population behind these larger East and South Asians who have been in the country for a lot longer, who had a stronger support system and other organizations. When we came, there were no Cambodian organizations. There were no, support system. So there's like a disparity within our community where people within, like, let's say in education, right? A lot of people think that we're graduating high schools and we're going to colleges. A huge population of that Asian population that is not graduating is actually Southeast Asians. Mm-hmm. We have high truancy. A lot drop out. A lot don't even attend college or even try to apply. And a lot of people don't realize this because they just go by the statistical of the majority of the Asian population, right? So that's something that we always try to reveal to make ourselves more visible within our community, to make them understand that not all Asians are succeeding and we need the help. And the sad part is, if we don't disaggregate data, meaning, you know how like when you get a form, it'll say Caucasian, white, Hispanic, not Caucasian, and then Asian, and then African American. By disaggregating data, meaning having a box to fill in or selecting Cambodian, Lao, Vietnamese, Chinese, it'll show that, it'll literally reveal that there is a specific population that is in need and in need of help. And, you know, that's something that we're striving to do, is to finally give a voice to ourselves, because it's so hard to be a minority within a minority.
We'll definitely continue this thought here. We've been talking with Rong Sorn and Sarun Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. We're going to take a quick commercial break. 610-664-4100 is the number if you'd like to call and ask questions for Rong or Sarun Chan. My name is Joe Valley. I'm your moderator. We'll be here till 1 o'clock today on WWDBAM 860. We're back on WWDBAM 860. My name is Joe Valley. We're talking with Rong Sorn and Sarun Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. 610-664-4100 is the number you can call if you have questions for the two. And we're going to be here for another half hour. Thanks again for joining the program, guys.
Thank you.
Now, Sarun, before the commercial break, you talked about the difficulty of some Asians as far as getting into college and furthering their education. Mm-hmm. And you also have a teens organizing proactivity program.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that, because it does start when you're a teenager and, mm-hmm. and the stressing of education and higher learning after that.
Yep. So with the teens organizing proactivity, when I first came to CAGP, we had a successful summer youth program, and they invited me to create a year-round youth program. And that's when I...
So you started this program?
Yeah, I started it 2.5 years ago. And the only lead I had was, guess, my own identity growing up as a refugee, I suppose, like a Cambodian American. And that's what I based my program off of. A lot of times, throughout the city, there's different youth programs that the hardest thing to do is recruit, retain, and engage youth, right? So you can have all the money in the world, but if they don't care about the program, they're not going to come back.
If they don't get it, they don't. They're not going to return.
And the beautiful thing about our program is, and with the lack of resources, my youth program is very diverse, and it focuses simply on identity, meaning meaning their upbringing, because there's a lot of push and pull throughout our culture, meaning their parents are like refugees, immigrant families, and they themselves, they were born in America. So, you know, when you go to school, they're, you know, you're American, you go through the whole American high school lifestyle, you know, the cliques and all that. But when you come home, it's like going back to Asia. You know what I mean? You got all these rules and things like that. And your parents, some of them may or may not still speak English, and the foods you eat are different. But the main thing about TOP, my program, is that it focuses on identity. And the beautiful thing is, we have race dialogues, which talks about ethnicity, race, socioeconomic statuses, gender, sexism, homophobia, things like that. So that
all of that equating, into an education and higher learning experiences, because when you go to college, there are situations that you would not encounter necessarily at home.
Yep,
I know
exactly.
When I went to college, of course, there were, you know, domestic issues with friends and family and homosexuals and different human beings that you would encounter that not necessarily is in the quote-unquote high school mainstream, whether it's Asian, whether it's American. Mm-hmm. These are definitely things that in one's life that you do encounter.
Yep, and I always felt when I went to Penn State, basically I felt like I grew as a person, not in the classroom. It was outside the classroom, you know, and I tell my teens, like, they come from 10 to 20 different high schools. It's a citywide, you know, program, but they come from all over different high schools. And the cool thing is they represent almost 12 different cultural languages. So it's not just Cambodian. We have like Lao, Vietnamese, different language of Chinese. We have Haitian students. We have a mix of variety. And the key thing that I was able to bring them into was the fact that they didn't have a outlet of speaking about their identity, you know? And the cool thing is, you know, I don't push upon the idea of leadership on them, but they plan different events. And along the way, they've realized, wow, we are being leaders and we are learning about advocacy. Because one of the main things that they really fell in love with the first year was our Stop the Pain campaign, which is all about child sex slavery and human trafficking in Southeast Asia. And being in Cambodia, which is the hub of child sex slavery, these teens are from the inner city, right? And being able to fundraise and raise awareness about child sex slavery really impacted them. To know that, yo, I'm from this bad neighborhood that people says bad. I go to maybe a neighborhood school, but I was able to help rescue, save, feed, and house these children that were human, you know, that were kidnapped and, you know, sexually assaulted and sold for sex slavery. And that really impacted them, and that inspired them to become better leaders within the community. Because if they were able to tackle such a huge issue as child sex slavery and human trafficking, they could come back and look at themselves in their neighborhoods and the things that are happening in their lives and tackle that.
Well, they're making a difference is what they're doing.
Yep.
And when you're making a difference and you are struggling and searching for that identity, it works wonders for someone's self-esteem and somebody's self-worth just in general.
Yep.
And that's how we wanted to build the foundation, because ultimately we wanted to see them reach their goals in life, succeed in school or career-wise. But without that good foundation, they may or may not reach their goal. So with that program, it's help them bring all these, kind of make them a wholesome person. So that's what we're trying to do.
We're talking with Rong Sorn and Sarun Chen of the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. Now, to lighten the mood a little bit, you guys have your New Year's coming up. Tell us a little bit about that. March 30th, I believe, right?
Yep. Yeah, our New Year's is a really huge event. Even though we're lacking resources and funding, we go all out for this New Year's. And a lot of times...
You have to. It's New Year's.
Yeah, you got it. And the thing is, a lot of people don't realize that, again, like, there's so many ethnicities within the Asian population that we don't celebrate, like, Chinese New Year's. You know, theirs is earlier in the year. Ours is actually in April. It's on April 13th, 14th, and 15th. But generally, we celebrate for a week. And our New Year's, we tend to have it... We don't want to connect it. Well, it's hard to pick a time because people have to go to the temples, you know, during those days. So our New Year's is on March 30th this year. We're celebrating. But it's a huge event. And we have about 300 to 400 guests come.
No.
How many?
550.
Oh, 550.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's huge.
Wow, that's a pretty big number.
Uh-huh. And it's a banquet, too. So it's at the Hilton Hotel.
On City Line, right here.
On City Line, yep. And they have a sit-down dinner. There's a live band. They have
performances.
Cool thing is, performances by by our cultural program. So our little kids and some of our teens, they practice all year, and then they perform on stage. It's a beautiful, elegant, classical ballet dances and folk dances. And shout out to Ming Bateri and Lanika for the cultural program, and because they do amazing work there.
Yes.
So it's just an awesome event. And when you go, you think that, oh, there's going to be a bunch of Cambodians in the room. It's very diverse.
Yes.
It's people representing from different organizations who we've built relationships with. It's community members. And it's just a beautiful night to just see these different array of people. City officials are there, maybe even police officers. The mayor comes by all the time.
Yeah. And I just wanted to say that with this event, if we wanted to call out to any businesses owner out there who wanted to promote their businesses, this is the best time for them to reach out to our community members is by sponsoring our events. And that's how help us too to exist, to help serve the community, to make a difference in the community. So we put our nice event, they can come and enjoy doing sponsorship or ad, purchase an ad that we create, like this New Year booklet. It's beautiful. And at the same time, supporting the work that we do.
How does one get connected with your website if they want to do that?
Well, our website is www.cagp.org. Right now, we don't have an IT person, so a little bit out of date. So if
so
anyone
maybe there's an IT person that's listening who
so
might want to.
So anyone out there who specializes in IT and would like to help out, let us know. But our Facebook page, because we can manage ourselves, is up to date. And Sarun Chan is our person who's been updating.
Addict. That's what she's trying
okay,
to
say.
Okay,
so you run the Facebook team.
Yeah, because I'm always on Facebook. But yeah, our Facebook is simply facebook.com/CAGP events. And everything's always updated there, and you can always get the latest information as well on the Facebook.
Or people can email us at wrong.
How do you spell wrong? Just so
okay,
people...
R-O-R-N-G. @cagp.org.
Yep. And also, I want to stress not only just to sponsor the event, or it's the human resource.
Yes.
So like the IT person, or if you wanted to volunteer, if you're a college student, you want to intern for us, or even we're also like trying to get recruit for new board members,
yes.
You know, and also,
advisory board,
because we need, I guess, diverse minds and diverse expertise to help our organization, in a sense, get reincarnated through these tough times. And it's, you know, everyone's mind is special. So, you know, we're excited. So if you're out there somewhere and you're innovative and creative and you have like, you want to help out a nonprofit who's been around for 34 years, you know, check us out on the Facebook and contact us.
Your organization is only as good as your help. Mm-hmm. So that is definitely important that mm-hmm. people who do reach out are definitely qualified and have an interest, a vested interest, I think, in your community. Is there any specific locations for your organization?
Yes, we have two centers. One is at 5412 North 5th Street. That's in Olney Logan. And then we have another center at 2416 South 7th Street, where we host the public safety meeting last night. Because our community kind of spread from both sides, one end to another, it's hard for them to commute to one location. So therefore, we have the other office in South Philly. So we have two offices. For our walk-in, Tuesday and Thursday is at the North office, which is at 5412 North 5th Street. And then on Wednesday is at South Philadelphia office. So besides running other programs, we have walk-in, which means people can walk in for any kind of reason or need and then meet one of us to do impact and assessment and trying to facilitate and coordinate the services, connecting to different providers or whatnot so that they can get the need that so that they can get the services they need.
We've been talking with Rong Sorn and Sarun Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. And as we were mentioning earlier, for those who are just joining us, when you think of Philadelphia, normally you wouldn't think of the Cambodian community as a general bigger population, if you will. But you said there's actually a pretty large number in your community in the Delaware Valley. Tell us a little bit more about that. You said around 18 to 20,000?
Yes.
Generally?
When I started working with Cambodian Association, my job was to do community research, and by talking to the resettlement agencies and looking at the census data and the Office of Refugee Resettlements, I was told that there's approximately 2,000 Cambodian refugees settled in Philadelphia areas, and the average family size is 7 people. You can multiply that. And then the increase of number, like, for example, Saron is moving from New York, right? And also families who moving from Arizona, from others, Cedar Estate, coming to Philadelphia. So the number increase.
So that, is that 2,000? Is that a year?
No. At the time, I was told that the number of refugee families settled in Philadelphia between the early 1980 to 1992s was about 2,000 families.
Okay, so over a 12-year decade span.
Yes. But again, the increase of birth rate and also families who moving from our states or from other areas coming to Philadelphia. During the 80s, I wanted to stress that during the 80s, Philadelphia was a very vibrant city with a lot of jobs available, especially those jobs that don't require education or skill much. A lot of manufacturers really highly recruiting Cambodian or refugees from Southeast Asia to work at their factories or whatnot. And that was a huge influx of refugee and immigrant bringing their family to this neighborhood, I mean, this city, because of availability of jobs, right? People work out in the field because that's where we came from. Most of us came from rural and farm in Cambodia, so that's what we find jobs. Unfortunately, for the last 4 years, because of economic turndown, a lot of factories or manufacturing company either move away, closing down, or reducing the size of the employee. And for these folk who've been working there 15, 20 years and who've been able to support their family, now starting to lose their job, and they're not at a retiring age. That is the issue that we are facing right now. How we can help these people find another job that can support their family before they reach retiring age, but they don't speak very much English, but they are hardworking people. So that's something that we wanted to share also. How can we help these folk when we have limited resources?
As you said, you do have limited resources. Your community, despite that, seems to be making great strides, as we've discussed in the last hour. If possible, where do you see the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia in the next 5 years?
Well, I wanted to see that we are focusing more, again, is to really engage and also mobilize our community to take charge of their own life, to get better education, to help their communities stay safer, increase or make their businesses, grow their business so that they can become self-sufficient. And at the same time, one thing that we always a struggle for us is to find medical doctors to come and help those our community who really is huge health disparity, right? So we wanted to continue to address the health disparity, the social economic development, the education, and immigration. That's an ongoing. But yet we wanted to do more leadership development, community organizing, and to bring different entities, different community organization, community member, city government agency to come and work together for the better of our society as a whole. That's what we wanted to see. Not only to build our agency to become more sustainable, but also to really mobilize more people to take charge of their life.
Yeah, and to stress about the health disparities, a lot of times other larger organizations think, oh, the Cambodian population or the Vietnamese population or whatever, right? They'll say, oh, just translate this piece of paper, this document into the language. And
not that simple, though.
It's not that simple because they forget that, let's say, Khmer and Lao, right? There was a war, right? Especially in the Cambodian population, the elders or the parents can't even read the language because they didn't finish school or they were in refugee camps. So by thinking that, oh, they'll spend money on just translating these documents, what really is in need is interpreters, actual human beings to interpret for them. Because I know for our intake services, a lot of people come in, like every year, thousands of people come in for the past few years with just mail, right? Just with translated mail, even. Like, they don't know what exactly they're reading, and there's a huge trust issue with that. There's a lot of trust, you know, if they don't know where it's from, and even if it's in Khmer, I also want to do a thing if you don't know what Khmer is. We're called Cambodian, but that's a nationality. So Khmer is actually the language and the people of Cambodia. It's a ethnic, that's the ethnicity that we actually go by. So whenever people talk about Cambodian, it's actually Khmer. But yeah, so that's a huge disparity that people don't realize, that we need actual interpreters, not just translated documents.
And beyond that, I wanted to stress that for
If you can hold that thought, actually, Saran, we have to take one final commercial break. We've been talking with Rong Sorn and Sarun Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. 610-664-4100 is the number to call. And we'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to WWDBAM 860. We're back at the closing moments, talking with Rong Sorn and Sarun Chan of the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. 610-664-4100 is the number to call if you have any questions for Rong or Sarun. Now, Rong, before the commercial break, we were talking about pressing issues in the community. And I know that there are several obstacles that you guys are trying to overcome, and you're doing a great job in trying to make things happen. What is generally the most pressing issue that you're dealing with right now, and what are your ways that you're trying to solve it?
Well, again, I wanted to go back to social and economic developments.
Yes.
That is key, because when you have a job, you can support your families and you can take care your basic needs, and also be able to feel less stress and be able to help support the family to go to school, or you know, also mentally and physically healthy, right? So one thing that I wanted to share is that we was talking about, okay, if agency need help providing services to our community, is to provide interpretation. At the same time, we wanted to encourage employers or city government agency to promote or increase the diverse workforce. Not only these people can help assist and reach out to different communities and be able to be the bridge in the cultural gaps of the agency or the organization that they work with, but also it's the right thing to do. It's an equity issues. We're talking about the civil rights issue that we're talking about. It's a human right issue we're talking about. So it's great to increase the diversity in the workforce of any company, any city agency. And that's what we've been advocating for. How can the city government or the state or the federal government can help us by recruiting and training our community member to become responsible, productive citizens, so that they can take care of themselves, take care of their family, and together we can make a better community. So, and for our agency as a whole, we definitely need a lot of resource. We are a small agency with very small staff, but we serve over 1,000 clients directly per year. And a lot of other things that we do, as you see in our newsletter, events and advocacies and community organizing. And we need, we run on a shoestring budget, and what we need is human resource, financial support. We're talking about in-kind support. For example, in-kind can be expertise that you can help us, or if you can't come and you have some money, you can donate to us. We accept that too. For example, recently, Pico Energy, by knowing that the struggle we have, they came in, they provide the services for free and bring in the equipment, changing, for example, just basic air conditioning that we have for the as long as our agency exists, right?
Yeah,
so we were so happy that Pico was able to help us. That saved us a lot of money because we need to keep the office open. So the operating cost is huge. It's over $100,000 to maintain two buildings, to keep everything running, turn the light on, you know, air conditioning or the heat in the winter. That costs money, and that we don't usually get funding for. And any support that we get is helpful.
Well, I know that there are some good people out there who I'm sure would like to contribute and help you guys out. And how can they get a hold of both of you in order to do that?
again, if our contact is on our website and our Facebook too.
Which is?
Again, our website is www.cagp.org. And
and our Facebook is facebook.com/CAGP events.
Okay. In the final moments, is there anything else that you two would like to add?
Well, we would like to thank you for hosting us and for us to share and bring awareness of who we are, what we do, and the struggle we have as a community organization and as a community, and how the community at large can really help and make a difference in our community and in society as a whole. So we greatly appreciate for the time, and also thank you. And we hope that our listener can really share with their family and friend and other who may be interested in helping or knowing more about us.
Well, we'd like to thank both of you two for stopping by. And I know with economic times, it's tough. And what you two are doing is very admirable. You're doing a great job. And despite the obstacles, I wish you both the best of luck. We're talking with Rong Soorn and Sarun Chan from the Cambodian Association of Greater Philadelphia. Thank you so much. And I wish you guys the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
My name is Joe Valley. You're listening to Talk AM 860, the multicultural voice of the Delaware Valley. Thanks for listening.